from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Craig Needles podcast, quick episode here to wrap up a short week. We've got Canada Day celebrations coming up tomorrow. There's going to be fireworks, which I know some people are not thrilled by, as I said on Classic Rock 98.1 earlier in the week. I understand the people that are annoyed by fireworks from the perspective of, hey, this happens frequently all hours of the night. We don't know when it's happening. That's entirely fair. I would have no problem with fireworks if I could genuinely look someone in the eye and say, hey, it happens 3-4 nights a year and it stops at 11 p.m. I would be able to say to them, look, you're just going to have to deal with it that this is something that occurs. Now, that is not what happens. So I'm entirely appreciative of the city's efforts to try to clean that up and bring it closer to what should be happening. I've seen some counselors post about this on social media. So hopefully that is exactly what continues to occur. Speaking of Canada Day, coming up on Friday at Victoria Park, Tom Hennessy is going to be wrapping up his walk of gratitude. He's trying to raise money for veterans who are dealing with homelessness. He's raised quite a bit already, and that number is only going to continue to grow, which is a phenomenal thing that he's been doing. So what made him come to the idea? What's happening? Let's talk about that right now with Tom Hennessy, who is a veteran. He and his wife Joy join us to have a conversation about the Walk of Gratitude and his story. Tom, by the way, 100 years old and walking 100 miles as part of this. So Tom, thank you so much for doing this. Appreciative of you spending a few minutes here on the Craig Needles podcast, which of course is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London. Thank you, Tom.
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely.
So tell me about the Walk of Gratitude. How did we come up with the idea? What's it all about? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, the idea of the walk came up kind of recently, but the idea for doing it, or for how I started, was having got through a good few years of the war and got through safely. I at that time, and that's 80 years ago, I had a great deal of gratitude because I felt, even though I was 25, I felt I was kind of given my life back. I got through the danger and lost friends and lost my brother and various things, but I had got through. So I was very grateful for that. And I think that kind of set me up for living to be grateful and thankful. And so I have come through with a thankful heart. And then recently, I became 100. And I was reading the Legion magazine one day and about homeless veterans. And I wondered, wow, homeless veterans. And I said to my wife, Joy, I said, I think I've got it, what I can do to say thank you to Canada. Because Canada has been very good to me. I came after the war, came back here after the war. And Canada has been very, very good to me. And I thought, I can do that. Yes, I can walk. So I went to call the Legion, and a couple of people down there were very helpful to get me what to do. So I started the walk, and I set out to do 100 kilometers. But having done it, I did it quite easily. So I decided to make it 100 miles. And so that brings it to the walk, to decide to walk 100 miles to see if we can raise money for homeless veterans. And that's a way of, I thought, the veterans represent Canada. They're all over the world. They serve their country. And that's a way of saying thank you to Canada, because I believe we're the luckiest people in the world to be living in Canada. So that's my story about why.
It's a great story, and it's remarkably inspiring. So you've done a lot of walking already. There's still more walking to do, but how much have you already done?
We've done about 98 or 99. I walk it in kilometers. It's easier to count, and then we switch it to miles. And when we do the last walk on Friday morning, that will be the last kilometer, and that'll make it 100 miles.
So where does it all wind up on Friday morning then?
Well, it ends up, I think it's called...
you're starting again at Veterans Gardens.
Oh, yeah, we're starting at the Veterans Gardens, just behind the Cenotaph. That's where we meet every Tuesday and Thursday. We do a walk around the park. So those who want to join me, I've had people join me for the last 2 weeks, and we walk a couple of kilometers around there. But that's where the walk starts at 12 o'clock. Well, we meet at 12 o'clock, and then we move off at 12:20 to get to the square.
Dundas Place.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's really a fantastic story. You're raising money for a cause that's really important. And look, the government, I think, has let our veterans down here in this situation. And it shouldn't necessarily be on people like you to help them out of this spot. But I'm glad you are, and I think that this is a truly inspiring story. So thank you for doing it. What's it been like? You mentioned, you know, people walking with you. What have the conversations been like when you've told people about this, or people have come to walk with you? What have they asked you about? What do they want to talk about?
Well, they asked me, you know, a bit about my flying experience. It's interested there. One of the things that's come through with this is quite a bit is that I'm 100. And I'm still kind of reasonably bright, and I can.
I think you're more than reasonably bright. I think you're doing pretty good for 100. So I'm pretty happy about that.
And I'm, you know, I can walk as quite easily, so I don't have any problems particularly. So what has happened is some people have told me that their parents have been watching the television show they had on a few weeks ago about this, and their parents were saying, you know, I think at 83, I think I can do a bit more than just sitting around. So it's become kind of a bit of a challenge to some people to try and get up and walk.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, we're talking about fitness. We're talking about raising a few dollars for an important cause here. So it seems like it's a good news story all the way around for a lot of people.
Yeah. And you mentioned the government there.
Yes.
This is no criticism
of course.
The government. I don't know the actual figures for veterans and so forth. But, you know, with this business of war, some of the results of it or the things that happen to people, they don't show up even after they've left the service for maybe 5 years, 6 years, 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then it comes and there have been some pretty grim things have happened, and the folks at the Legion here, they will go out and find these veterans sleeping in a park or whatever they're doing like that, and because veterans feel they can't admit too much that they need help, and so they suffer for it, and the people in the London branch there, they will go and get them and help them and start them on track and help them to have a place to live and get them working and get them straight helped out. So that's what it's all about, is helping these people.
That's fantastic. And I'm really glad to hear that. I want to ask you a little bit, Tom, about your service and about the flying that you did in the Second World War. I've got some of the list in front of me here just via text, but it's a long list. So what can you tell us about sort of what your part of the Second World War was?
Well, my part was in a single engine in operations. It's on a single engine fighter pilot in a Spitfire. So I spent my time on Spitfire squadrons, and something that's interesting in my flying training, some people are interested to hear this story, and that is I joined the RAF. I was an Irishman and went over to England and did what we call square bashing, which everybody has to do for 6 weeks, you know, learning to walk and salute and that kind of stuff. And then they sent us to, next thing we got civilian clothes, and we were in a ship on our way to Canada. And we wondered, what on earth have we got civilian clothes in a kit bag for? Anyway, one night when we were in Toronto there, they said, put on the clothes, you're going to the States. So we put on the civilian clothes and we rode the train right through here, London, into Chicago, got on the Santa Fe Streamliner and went down to Ponca City, Oklahoma. And we were trained by civilian pilots. And so we were wearing civilian coveralls and they were civilians. And this was before Pearl Harbor. And one day when we were in Ponca City, we're listening to the radio and the DJ there was berating Turkey because Turkey was training German pilots. And they were neutral as well. So even though we were training people, no, the Americans were training us, the Turkish people were training German pilots. So anyway, came back from there, and I was on 504 Squadron.
So after that, you're back in Europe for a bit, right? And from my reading here, you were in Sicily and moved to Sicily kind of right before a pretty significant time in the war. Is that correct? You're there for a night, and then what happens?
We were wakened and told to come into the mess. We went into the mess, and Timber Woods, he was a Canadian, came in and said, well, guys, they went into Sicily tonight. And I said, what? I looked at the other guy that I'd been with. We didn't see anything. There wasn't a ship to be seen when we were out there. This on the morning when we took off to do a patrol, there were hundreds of ships on the invasion of Sicily. It was just absolute incredible sight to go from nothing. And these ships evidently had come from England, the States, North Africa, and Cairo, Egypt, and so forth. And here they were in darkness, had all come for that invasion. It was just an absolute miracle of timing.
So you get out of there and you wind up working or being connected with someone who is a pretty high profile again during the Second World War. What was next on the list for you as you continued to make your way through various parts of the Second World War?
And they had us working with Marshal Tito, who was in Yugoslavia. And we spent a lot of time supporting the partisans in northern Greece, Albania, and Yugoslavia and up there. And a lot of dive bombing and low-flying stuff, a little tricky in the mountains in Croatia. Anyway, and then as a fighter pilot, you go by hours. You don't go by trips. Bomber guys do trips of maybe 25 or 30 trips. And fighter pilots, as far as I know, anything I tell you is about me and not anybody else. You may have another pilot on that will tell you different things. Mm-hmm. But we did 200 hours, and we were on shift from 12 noon one day to 12 noon the next day. And we didn't, we'd fly till sunset, and then we'd be stand down, and then we'd have to be back on readiness a half hour before sunrise. And as I say, then I finished 200 hours. Operational flying, they call it. And I was sent back on rest. And I went back on rest. I went back to Cairo and I was stationed at an operational training unit. That's where you go when you come out, when you've just got your wings, then you go to an operational training place where they show you how to fire the guns and that kind of thing. So I was back there in, Egypt for 5 or 6 months, I think, something like that. And then they dropped VE Day took place in Europe. So we thought, oh, that's great. It'll be all over. Now we'll be going home. Well, no such luck. 2 weeks later, we were flying out to India. And in India, they had us training on Spitfires to take them off an aircraft carrier so that we would be ready when we were going to be invading Japan, when the paratroopers went into Singapore and got the airport, then we would have taken off from the aircraft carrier and landed at Singapore. However, about 3 weeks into that training, and it was what we had to do was get a Spitfire off the ground. They had two white lines painted, and that was equivalent to the amount of runway we would have on the carrier. So we had to kind of rev it up to full speed and try and keep it from tipping on its nose, let the brakes go and get it in the air. Anyway, about 3 weeks of that course, they dropped the big one on Nagasaki and the training stopped because there was going to be no invasion. And then, of all things, we didn't have much to do. They gave us odd jobs to do in India. But I was playing soccer one day and had the misfortune to fall over the goalkeeper and break my leg.
Oh, so wow.
I came back to England on a hospital ship. And that's my story.
And then you wind up coming to Canada after you you go back on the hospital ship. Well, what made you decide that's what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, when you've been in the service for a few years, for me anyway, they provide everything. You know, you give your name up and you get a number, but everything's provided. So for 5.5 years, I traveled from Ponca City, Oklahoma to India and changing places, you know, after a couple of months, always on the move. So I'm demobbed, and you have to, you're just left there. You have to get yourself kind of find yourself and start get organized and look for everything and get it. It's quite disturbing, kind of. I think several people have trouble with that. And one day I did have a job in a factory in London, England for a while, for just a few weeks. But in London one day I saw a sign outside a building and it said, come to Canada. So I thought, hey, there, I can go to Canada and get going again. Well, you couldn't get on a boat or anything else to get out of England because a lot of people were emigrating and moving. And so they had this scheme from Ontario, and I think there's a guy called Drew was the prime minister. I'm not sure.
Premier.
Yes.
Drew. And you paid £60, and within 2 weeks, I was in Toronto, back in Toronto, and landed in Toronto and lived in Jarvis Street in the Salvation Army Hotel for 3 days. And in that time, you were supposed to get yourself organized and working.
Yeah.
So then I'm back in Toronto now in 47. And I had some jobs, and then where I was staying with the landlady, she said to me one day, have you ever thought about teaching? And I said, well, no, not at all. Well, she said, I think you'd make a teacher. So I went, the teacher's college was quite near where I was boarding. And I went there, and one of the staff there interviewed me, and they said, oh, sure, you can take the teacher's certificate and work for it. So that's what I did. And basically, I spent the rest of my life teaching. And I became a phys ed supervisor or phys ed consultant.
Yeah, that's a very neat life, and I'm glad you wound up spending a lot of time here in London. And I know you spent some time in Bayfield as well. So yeah. I'm really glad.
I was in Toronto for about 3 years, I think, and then I was in Sarnia for 10, and then I was in London for the next 25, probably. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
I retired in London.
There you go. Well, it's a great story, and I'm glad that you're still able to do these walks and to give back. It's pretty incredible. Anything else you want to add for the folks that are listening before we wrap up our conversation here, Tom?
Well, the only thing I'd add is I have a tremendous respect and thankfulness for this country. And I think we need to wake up in the mornings. And I realize there are people with problems and people who don't have too much and are struggling. And it's a tough time now. But basically, there are, I don't know how many million refugees who would give anything to get to this country. So the only thing I would, I'd leave that to be. Mm-hmm. I'm walking the walk of gratitude, and that's because I live in this wonderful country.
Yeah, and that's incredible. And this is what I say about Canada is, hey, we're not perfect, but there are millions of people in this country who have come from some other place where it was very tough for them for economic reasons, for persecution reasons, because the refugees, whatever it happens to be, and their lives are better for it, and they would tell you that. And you know what? I'm wishing you the best of luck coming up on Friday. It's going to be great.
Thank you so much.
Tom Hennessy here on the Craig Needles Podcast. Going to have a little more political analysis for you on the podcast next week. We'll go back to Friday Roundtable next week, not doing it this week because it's a holiday and things won't be open, people spending time with their families and so forth. Do want to remind you before we wrap up, though, the Craig Needles Podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London, lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London. Luxury redefined. Choose yours today at the award-winning Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Find more of the Craig Needles Podcast at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca, as well as your favorite podcast app.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.